sing, 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 sing out loud. Don't you dare hold nothing back. Don't you dare hold nothing. Don't you dare hold nothing. Don't you dare hold nothing back. Don't you dare hold nothing. Don't you dare hold nothing. Don't you dare hold nothing back. Peace, Greenville. Thank you so much. You guys rock. Have a great night. Ciao.
Good afternoon. It's Monday, April 11th, and you're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW at 95.9 FM. Mud and Water is a weekly program that features news, ideas, and opinions of interest to progressive Manitobans. We broadcast live every week from the University of Winnipeg campus in downtown Winnipeg. Mud and Water wants to provide clarity and an alternative voice on issues that are often muddied through the corporate lens of mainstream media. On today's program, we'll talk to Winnipeg writer and teacher Dave Taylor about the safety and sustainability of the nuclear energy industry in Canada. I'm Josh Brandon, and this is Mud and Water. Japan's Fukushima nuclear facility suffered a series of explosions shortly after that country's devastating earthquake and tsunami on March 11th. It has been leaking radiation ever since, and an exclusion zone has been created around the site. Over the past month, people in Japan and around the world have been questioning the safety and viability of nuclear power. Dave Taylor is a longtime anti-nuclear activist with Concerned Citizens of Manitoba. He joins us in the studio. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Josh.
Some people recently have been arguing that with the partial meltdown of the nuclear plant at Fukushima, there have been no recorded deaths and only a few injuries. Does this show that nuclear power is safe?
Unfortunately, no. Radioactivity and radioisotopes in the environment are fairly insidious, and they get into plants and into the environment and into the food chain and remain there for a number of years, hundreds of years actually, depending on the radioisotope that was released. And in the case of Fukushima Daiichi, there was actually plutonium released into the air because there was a partial meltdown of the reactor core in several of the reactors.
And what does that show about the safety of nuclear facilities here in Canada?
Well, it's just nuclear facilities the world over. When we talk about Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, Fukushima. I mean, its safety is a major concern. When a reactor goes wrong, it's a potential disaster for the area, the people, for the environment.
Manitoba had a nuclear accident in 1978. Not a lot of people know about that incident. You wrote about it recently in the Winnipeg Free Press. Can you tell us a little bit about that incident?
Yes, that was the one WR1 reactor. It was an experimental reactor that they used to have at the Pinawa facility. It was cooled with with oil, a type of terphenyl isomer, and that oil happened to be released. There was a and ultimately it was released into the Winnipeg River. The reactor, the pencil reactor fuel actually cracked. It took us a lot of research and a lot of questioning over the years to be able to find out what happened with that reactor. That fuel bundle, the pencils of the fuel bundle actually cracked because of the heat, a loss of coolant, which is exactly the same as the Japanese situation. A loss of coolant causes the extreme heat within a nuclear reactor.
How much risk were Manitobans facing at that point?
Well, if the reactor core had melted down, which it didn't, it could have been very serious and spread, created a situation in that beautiful, pristine area of Lac des Bonnes and Pinawa on the Winnipeg River that was, areas would have been unusable.
Mm-hmm. And it took a long time for the details of this incident to be released, as I understand. Why did it take so long?
It took a lot of inquiring by our organization. I mean, we had to, at that time it was the Atomic Energy Control Board that was the Canadian agency that looked after Atomic Energy of Canada Limited. And we made numerous requests to Atomic Energy of Canada Limited, which were all turned down. Finally, through the Atomic Energy Control Board, Dr. Angus Bishop, she revealed that indeed this had happened. We went about it, finding out about it, sort of back to front, because we discovered the oil had been leaked out into the Winnipeg River first before we even found out about the reactor core.
Right. And are all the details now released, or are we still, are there still things we're still wanting to ask questions about?
No. Atomic Energy Canada Limited is exempt under the Freedom of Information Act in Canada, and that information, the full report, nuclear report, has not been released to the public on this accident at the WR1 reactor.
Mm-hmm. One of the victories of your organization and the anti-nuclear campaign in Manitoba was to secure a ban on nuclear waste disposal in this province in the 1980s. Why was that ban important?
Although the disposal of nuclear waste it's a federal jurisdiction. We lobbied extensively at that time to get the provincial government to come up with a high-level radioactive waste act. And it was the Pauley government that actually, and Gerard Lecuyer was the Minister of the Environment at that time, who put the bill forth, and the act came through. It's very important that each individual province stands up and makes, what the industry is looking for, they're looking for a place that's remote, that has a batholith of Canadian Shield Rock to drill their hole down and to implement deep geological disposal. Disposal is something that, even on our borders in Manitoba, has not gone away. Even though we have the High-Level Radioactive Waste Act, we still have communities being coerced by the Nuclear Waste Fuel Management Organization. Creighton, Saskatchewan, right next to Flin Flon, Ear Falls, which is close to Red Lake, both those communities, although they're not in Manitoba, the watersheds flow right into our province. So if there is a geological repository for high-level radioactive waste put on those boundaries, we, the people of Manitoba, may well suffer the consequences, which is the leaking of radioactive materials into the environment.
A lot of people would say that the Canadian Shield looks pretty solid. Is it safe disposing nuclear waste in those deep rock holes that you're talking about?
Well, we're talking here about an extended period of time, much longer than human history has been recorded. The half-life for plutonium is 28,000 years, and to be able to contain these elements, it's an enormous period of time. It's a quarter of a million years, well beyond what we can even fathom or imagine. It's ad infinitum. This is a folly. This is not worth the few dollars that, you know, the few megawatts of electricity that we're producing now, the future, to mortgage our future and our children and our environment.
Right. And what about the risks of transporting the waste across Manitoba if it's being produced in Ontario and disposed of in Saskatchewan? What risks do Manitobans face in the transport?
Well, anytime you remove nuclear waste from reactors, it's extremely hot and it's giving off radioactivity. And even when they transport it, Atomic Energy Canada Limited has conceded that yes, indeed, there is radioactivity given off from these shipments. We've got many examples in the province of Highway Number 1 with accidents. If there was ever an accident, it's something that it's not, you know, we can never get it back. We can never get the environment back that's damaged.
You've mentioned that when nuclear power was first proposed in the 1950s, that it was promoted as being so cheap that you wouldn't have to meter it. Has that been true?
Well, you can ask ratepayers in Ontario. At one time, Ontario produced 60% of its electricity through nuclear, Ontario used to have Ontario Hydro, but unfortunately, the cost of repairing reactors and of keeping Ontario Hydro going was overwhelming, and they actually went belly up, and now it's Ontario Power Generation. So, mm-hmm. You know, Ontario, it's a nightmare of financial difficulties. They predicted these reactors, every reactor in Canada is going to last 25 years. Well, many of them have to be retubed after about 12 to 15 years, which basically costs the same price as the original price of the reactor. So economically, it is not feasible at all. And the Canadian government keeps throwing money at it. It's been, in terms of research and development money, it's been $17.5 billion that have been thrown by the Canadian government at the Canadian nuclear, Atomic Energy Canada for the nuclear industry.
Right. And there's also a subsidy, I understand, related to the liability limit for nuclear.
Yes, indeed. I mean, there is an upper limit, and in terms of what can be paid out, in terms of check your home insurance. I mean, you've only got a certain amount of liability for a nuclear accident, and it's nowhere near what it would cost to remedy a situation. In fact, most situations can't be remedied, so of this nature.
What can Manitobans do if they want to be involved in helping combat the threat of nuclear power?
Well, there are a couple of organizations. I mean, the Green Party of Canada, Elizabeth May, I've worked very, very closely with her for a number of years. The Green Party of Canada is a very strong opponent of nuclear energy and the use of nuclear fuel in reactors, etc. We've got organizations such as the Sierra Club nationally, Campaign for Nuclear Phase-Out, the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. They're all very, very strong organizations that raise the important questions for the nuclear industry.
Well, thanks so much for coming in today, Dave.
Thank you very much, Josh.
I've been speaking with anti-nuclear activist Dave Taylor.
I know a man, he's a bit of a brat. Lies to his friends, says he knows we're a tight guy. I know a man, she's running the world. Let's take him down, hold him down. We don't want him around here no more. All on his own, but he don't keep it down. 3 years later, still playing the lamb. Yeah, it's not the problem, it's the cause, it's the problem. Just not enough to go around. No, there's never enough of it. Oh,
from dust to dust, a set of eyes and 10 ears, a collection of fears. Is this as good as it gets? Writing on a stone after 2 million years. Holy
The Waking Eyes with All Empires Fall. And now I'm joined by Val Cavers for some short announcements. There's a book launch for Good Places to Live, Poverty and Public Housing in Canada on Wednesday, April 13th at 8 p.m. at McNally Robinson Bookstore in Grant Park. The book looks at problems associated with public housing and how they are often a result of structural inequalities and neoliberal government policies. At the Creatory Gallery, there's a fundraising event, Strength by Numbers, on Friday, April 15th from 7:30 p.m. at 125 Adelaide Street. It includes performances and an art auction.
On April 19th, there will be a Red Tent Day of Action to draw attention to the critical housing shortage in Canada. Actions will take place in five cities, including Winnipeg. On April 19th, people will be assembling at 10 o'clock at the corner of Kennedy and York, with a short march to Earcom at the corner of McDermott and Ellen, and there will be a press conference there. There's a federal all-party forum on the environment planned for Wednesday, April 20th. That's from 7 to 9 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church at 603 Wellington Crescent.
And Winnipeg's Food Fruit Share is looking for volunteers who are interested in picking, sharing, and enjoying local fruit. Volunteers pick the fruit, some of which is shared with community organizations that feed persons in need. Fruit Share is also looking for fruit owners to dedicate their fruit. More information is at fruitshare.ca. And now we have a few short news items.
France's controversial ban on the Muslim face veil comes into force today, with women who wear a niqab or burqa in a public place risking a fine of 150 euros. The law, which President Nicolas Sarkozy says is designed to reaffirm French secular values and the rights of women, is likely to affect about 2,000 women living in France. Police in Paris today arrested 59 people at an unauthorized protest against the new law. The ban on the veil will apply in all public places. It will not apply in private homes, hotel rooms, and office space, or in cars. The proposed ban has been contentious in France, where almost 10% of the 62 million population are Muslim. Amnesty International opposed the measure, saying it violates the right and liberty of expression and religion of those women who wear the burqa and the niqab as an expression of their identity or their convictions.
This weekend, thousands of people rallied in Toronto to protest privatization and cuts to city services. The demonstration was organized by a coalition of unions, community activists, environmentalists, and student groups. Citizens are calling on Toronto Mayor Rob Ford to stop plans to privatize transit, sell off public housing, and impose user fees at recreation center facilities.
Japan is considering raising the severity level of its nuclear crisis to put it on par with the Chernobyl accident 25 years ago, the worst atomic power disaster in history. The report came as the government expanded an evacuation zone around the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant because of the high levels of accumulated radiation. It has been 1 month since a 15-meter tsunami ripped through the complex, causing massive damage to its reactors, which engineers are still struggling to control. The Kyoto report said that the high levels of radiation released by the Fukushima Daiichi plant meant it could raise the severity level from 5 to the highest 7, the same as the 1986 Chernobyl accident.
The city of Winnipeg continues to develop its garbage and recycling master plan. The plan will be presented to City Council in the fall of 2011. At a recent public forum on the plan, citizens expressed concerns about various elements of the plan. Citizens' concerns include carbon costs associated with recyclable materials that can't be recycled in Manitoba, no clear plan for a curbside composting program, and no absolute or per capita targets for landfill waste.
Human rights groups in the United States are planning a national boycott of the state of Georgia if the southern state passes anti-immigration legislation. Arizona passed similar legislation in 2010 that gives local police officers authority to detain and arrest people for perceived immigration violations. Civil liberties groups have said that these laws encourage racial profiling. Some Georgia-based corporations include Coca-Cola, CNN, and Church's Chicken.
At the Manitoba NDP convention this weekend, Finance Minister Roseanne Wochak said that two words sum up Manitoba's economic success: Target and IKEA. However, a union in the United States considers IKEA's Swedwood unit to be one of the most hazardous furniture plants in the country. According to a 2010 report by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, certain types of injuries are several times above the U.S. national average at IKEA's Swedwood operations in Danville, Virginia. The company has also been accused of harassing union organizers and firing union supporters. Corporate watchdog CorpWatch has said that Target is just Walmart in a prettier package, with the same low wages and sweatshop suppliers. That was Christine Fellows with Let Us Have Done with the Umbrella of Our Contagion. Thank you. brings us to the end of Mud and Water. This week, Mud and Water was written and produced by Val Cavers, Karen McIntosh, and me, Josh Brandon. We'll be back next Monday at 5:30 on CKUW 95.9 FM for more news, arts, and music and opinions. Thanks for listening.